got off of it a while ago. Yeah,
talking about the ranching.
Yeah, we'll get back on that. See, they started out with that ranching. And, of course, everything was shipped out there by train. You saw that picture there. Mm-hmm. That's what those loading chutes that you can see there is. That's on the railroad track.
On the railroad,
go to the railroad track. Everything was shipped out by rail.
Yeah, I see. It says TNNO on the side. That's actually a car there. If you look right there, there's a sign.
Uh-huh.
TNNO, Texas North.
Had a car there ready to ship
well, that's
out.
That's great. I didn't even notice that until you mentioned
it. No. But, he started that range. And, they bought 10,000 head of goats and put in there.
10,000 head of goats?
Yes, sir. And those goats were shipped in there.
You just said on the glass.
They even built, they brought a bunch of Mexican goat herders in there. And they had some Mexican shacks alongside that railroad track on between railroad, between Neff and Rayville. And
I'm just gonna set this stuff down here.
And those goats started dying. And one of my father's job was to burn them goats. He said he burned as many as 800 head of goats a day. When they started dying, so they give up on that.
I wouldn't think that'd be good country for goats.
No.
They like high rocky ground.
And they had briar patch, them old Angora goats would get tangled in them briars and they'd find them dead.
I might take a little bit after a while, but I'm fine for right now, though. Thank you, though.
But then I don't know the.
So this would have been the temples just trying to raise these.
Well,
goats.
Old man Ray, they turned it over to him. See,
Mr.
he was
Ray.
A ranger
okay,
when
Mr.
he
Ray
came.
Did this. Okay.
J.J. Ray, and they had their own slaughter pen out there. See, they furnished meat for Dieball. That meat was brought into Dieball by train to the commissary. They killed hogs, and they had a real nice slaughter pen there. Stayed there up until the 30s. I remember seeing that slaughter pen. It was right on the side of the railroad track there before you get to Rayville. But they slaughtered hogs, slaughtered cows, and sent them to the commissary for meat. They had that operation going.
Yeah, I think I remember reading and or hearing Mr. Temple talk about that. Because that would have been his grandfather, Mr. T.L.L. Temple, because he died in 35, and I think they started, at Rayville even earlier than that.
Oh, yeah, in the teens when
the
that,
teens, okay.
that thing started. They had, between 3,000 and 4,000 head of cattle on there then. Big operation.
Now, like I said, I haven't been in Boggy Slough, but like I said, Mrs. Elaine Ingram Lockhart we've ridden around, the outskirts of Temple property there in Trinity County, and there's a lot of pasture land. Now, inside of Boggy Slough, it's all pretty much woods, though, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So these large herds of cattle were just roaming through the woods.
Yeah. See, they did in that hardwood timber, and then they cut the brush. My father said they cleared it, but they raised some good cows in there. It was a prosperous range, but they give it up. I guess they taken that away from in 1931 is when old man Ray left there. He went to Renfro Hunting Club.
Mm.
Let him have that for a while. Then when he left here, he went to Rosevine and put in a ranch of his own up there.
Where is Rosevine? What part of the?
It's up close to Dallas up there.
Dallas.
I believe Rosevine's name, that little place up there. Somewhere up there in that ranching country. But that's where he passed away. Now his son stayed here for years, J.J. Jr. He ended up an inspector for the railroad company.
For TSE or one of the other mainline railroads?
Southern Pacific. Mainline railroad.
Was he based in Lufkin? J.J. Ray Jr.?
Yeah, he...
At the Lufkin?
he lived here in Lufkin most of the time. Part of the time he went to New Orleans. He went all the way from New Orleans to, he'd stay here a while in New Orleans. Hmm. Him and old man E.C. Durham were real good friends. Okay.
Yeah, E.C. Durham died in 51, but he was an old railroad man. His father had a logging railroad in the 1880s even. Mr. Durham did up around Longview.
Well, all of this railroad stuff, Red Devereaux pretty well built.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one that built that old tower right there.
Oh, that picture of the water
picture,
tower.
Okay. Red Devereaux built that. And when they got ready to tear that down, they had a D6 cat, and they like never pushed that thing over with a D6 cat. Well, when he put something together, he put it together. No, they taken it out. It's laying out there at Easton Lake. Yeah, they drug it out from how we that old, what was formerly the old water tank.
Hmm. Hold just a minute. I want to get a few photographs. Yes, we're looking at the photographs that I took out at Alcida or Gilbert in the old Easton Lake Club, and they're telling me that the water tank that filled the locomotives was just right near the house. What they now call the clubhouse.
Yeah.
But tell me what, that was the section foreman's house, you said.
Well, now you looking, this you said you was looking from.
Yeah, we're standing on the Angelina County side.
Looking across
looking
the river.
Yeah.
All right before you get to where this trestle starts, between there and that road,
mm-hmm.
back there, back the house, that was about a third of the way there. Is where the water tower sits, just across the road.
Okay. And tell me about, and why did they tear it down? This picture of you with the tower is dated 1974. And about when and why did they tear it down?
They tore it down, I guess, that year or the following year.
Okay.
The company then, they didn't want to buy a culprit, so they
when they had a good one right sitting right there, huh?
Yeah, so they, but I'll tell you, they like to never got that thing. That D6 cat is all it could do to pull it up that road up there to where they finally put it in the ground. But they had to cut both ends of it. They spent enough time on that thing to
they could have bought,
bought one.
And you said Dred Devereaux installed that, put that
Dred Devereaux built it for them, that platform there to put that on. And the way that thing operated, you see this this thing right here sticking out, that's where the water come out to
go. Yeah, the spout.
And the way it worked, all they had to do was just pull that down. It worked on pulleys up there above.
Okay.
And pull it down, and the water run in the engine when it got ready to cut it off. All that do is take it back up,
yeah.
Push it back up, and that's.
And tell me about the house, the Easton Lake Clubhouse. You said that was the section foreman's.
Yeah, that's where.
And that is the original site, that house.
It's
always been there.
It's always been there. That was built back in the 20s when they put that railroad track.
Okay.
But now,
do you remember who the section foreman, what his name was, or one that you remember?
Let's see. Matt Harris was the oldest one that I know of.
Okay.
Matt Harris stayed there for years.
Okay.
And then, Bonnie Brown moved there.
Bonnie Brown, I've heard that.
Bonnie Brown moved there when Matt left there. Matt went to Peavy Switch.
Okay.
His section foreman up there. And then this feller, old man Tom Welch, he was section foreman out of Dieball. Old man Tom Welch was. That was
Between Dieball and Blix, or
between,
okay,
yeah, he had that section of it, and then Bonnie Brown or Matt Harris had the back
to Bear,
Bear or well, he went all the way on up. I don't know just how far he that
yeah,
went that way, long way. And then Neff was the next section foreman. Every one of them houses, all section foreman houses was built just like this.
It looked just like that one.
Just
there.
Like that one there. Every one of their sections.
Like
now Kenleyville, I never was at that section house. I knew the fellow that was there for years, old man B. Connor. B. Connor was.
That be, there's a Connor Creek that runs through there. Mm-hmm. Is that probably
so
that
the same bunch of Connors?
Same
yeah.
Bunch of Connors.
Same bunch of Connors. But and then they up there. You probably heard of Bluff City.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
It's on above Kenleyville up there.
Yeah. In fact, Bluff City was going on. There was a camp there at the same time that you said your father was at Walkerton. We've got some pictures of the some school children at Bluff City in 1913.
Yeah.
You probably know O'Hara Chandler?
Oh, yeah.
You know, he went to school in Bluff City.
Did?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
In fact, I think 1913 is when he started the school. Because he's in that picture, him and the Estes, some of the Estes children.
Lee Estes.
Lee Estes.
Yeah, Lee Estes was a mechanic for the company.
Yeah.
But the first woman I ever talked to on telephone was one of them old crank telephones from Rayville to Diabol.
Uh-huh.
Was O'Hara Chandler's sister.
Rhoda Fay or Jimmy?
One of them.
One of them.
Both of them was... But that the first woman I ever talked to on telephone.
And you were at Rayville?
I was at Rayville.
Called Diabol.
Called Diabol. So, but that's a... I knew both of them real well. I knew Rhoda Fay and... I know George. George
yeah.
And I are very good friends.
I've never met George, but I keep in touch with Mr. O'Hara.
He left Diabol and stayed away for years.
Yes, sir. Yeah, he was in the Orange and Victoria for a good while. He was superintendent of Orange during World War II.
Yeah.
And that Orange grew from, I forget the exact number, but it was like 10,000 to more than 50,000 people almost overnight because of the shipyards down there. And so he was down there taking care of all the school kids.
Well, old man O'Hara, he was...
You're talking about Mr. O'Hara?
Mr. O'Hara, he had a high position in Diabol. I don't know just what
his
title
was.
Yeah,
I forget too, but yeah, he was an office director or something.
Yeah. Him and old man Bud Rutland.
Mm-hmm. Now, Bud, was that E.W. Rutland? Would that be the same one? Or?
Probably the same one. They called him Bud Rutland. And
now, I think E.W., the one I'm thinking of, died in 28. Bud might have been his son.
I know he was having parties at that Bogusloo Clubhouse in the 30s.
Oh, okay.
Bud Rutland.
Yeah, that might have been E.W.'s son. Do you know, or you ever heard of, you know, Fanny Farrington and her husband are buried up there over there off Lufkin Avenue. What's the name of that cemetery there in Lufkin? Glendale. And next to the Farringtons is E.W. Rutland. Did you know if they were in any way?
Well,
I don't think they were kin because the Farringtons were from, where were they from? St. Louis or somewhere up there. But I was just wondering why they were buried beside one another, kind of in the same plot. But, see, Frank Farrington died in 25 and E.W. died in 28. And they're buried beside one another. I just wondered if you had heard or knew.
I hadn't heard.
Okay. And the Ashfords are buried there, too. Kind of close to them. William Ashford.
Now, you know, you probably heard this rumor, which was true.
true rumor.
Well... You know, old man Dave Kinley was timber, started out timber buyer for Southern Pine Lumber Company. There's him and a...
He was from Trinity County.
A fellow by the name of Matt Wright. And I can't think of the other fellow's name right now. But there's three of them. So they were buying that timber and deeding the land to themselves and the timber to the company. And that went on for a long time. So in the 30s, they finally caught up with And so they fired Nat Wright. This was during the Depression. And they fired this other feller. I'll think of his name in a few minutes. No. But anyway, they couldn't fire old man Dave Kinley. He had so much stock in that company, if they'd have paid him off, he'd have broke Temple.
So I never heard it, because I wanted that to you. I've heard a lot of stories about Kinley, and like he'd done the company not right, you know, wrong kind of. Like, well, why'd they put up with it?
Well, you see,
that was why.
Judge Benton was their attorney, which Judge Benton and Mr. Kinley was brother-in-laws.
Okay.
So
I was going through some TSC records the other day, and it said they were the early attorneys for TSC. It was Kinley and Minton, Groveton, Texas.
Uh-huh.
So, okay. See, yeah, keep going. I'm sorry.
See, old man Kinley's brother,
connection.
He started the first abstract company that was ever in Groveton.
Hmm.
And he was also a judge over there. And so therefore, they had an outlet to work. And Kinley got a lot of that land. Nobody owned it, see. And his brother had that abstract company over there, so they just deed that timber to each other, deed that land to each other. He ended up with 2,200 acres over there at Gold Hill. That's the way he got it.
Mm.
And I can't think of his brother's name right now. He was also judge, and he performed the first abstract company that was ever in Grove. Mm. Back way in the Grove in the teens or first of the 20s. But
now, is this the same Judge Minton? That was it, R.E. Minton? Is that the?
Yeah.
R.E. Minton.
Yeah, that other fella's
now,
name.
Now,
was,
he stayed with the company a good while.
Oh, he stayed there until Ward Burke taking his place.
Yeah.
The other fella's name was Haywood Kirkland.
Haywood
Kirkland, Nat Wright, and D.C. Kinley. But back then, mostly what the company wanted was they didn't want the taxes on the land. No way. Getting
right.
That land and timber and all for less than $5 an acre.
Yeah.
So they just take and buy, say, a 100-acre tract of land, timber with timber on it there, and deed the land to themselves and timber to the company. And the company cut it and never think anything about it. Arthur and old man Dave never did get along.
How about Arthur Jr.?
Yeah.
The one that's alive today? He and Dave Kinley never got along.
They never got along. And old man Dave Kinley, him and his brother, they bought 1,400 acres of land over here on Alabama Creek for $1 an acre. And they kept that land. Mr. Kinley told me all about this story. And so they kept that land for years. And they finally sold the timber off of it to the company. And the company paid a big price for that timber, evidently. And they so much money invested. Arthur went over there and looked at it himself. So he told old man Dave, it made him mad. He come back and tells Mr. Kinley, he said, we're going to cut everything off of it and make a 2-for-4. And Mr. Kinley tells him, that's exactly what I want you to do, because I'm going to make a pasture out of it.
So did Mr. Temple go ahead and cut it then?
They cut it.
They
went ahead and cut it. But
Would that have been in the early 50s?
Yeah, that was.
In the 50s sometime?
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, that was in the 50s.
Mr. Temple, you know, when Henry Gresham Temple died in 48, then Arthur, you know, came from Lufkin Retail Yard to the Dabo, and then, you know, Mr. Temple's dad died in 51. And so, yeah, so he was already in Dabo by 48, but he wasn't head of the whole company until 51.
Yeah. He started the lumber yard here in Lufkin. The first Temple lumber yard that's ever started. Started right here in Lufkin. Right there of the railroad track on Frank Street.
Actually, the company did have one in 1914 when they actually started. Down in Houston.
Down in Houston.
Yeah. Yeah, down in
Houston. That's when Latney Temple.
Latney's dad, T.L.L. Jr., was president of that. And then it was called Texas Lumber Company. And then they, I don't know what happened, and then in 1920, Temple Lumber Company took over Texas Lumber Company. And for many, many years, it was called Temple Lumber Company. That was the retail side of it. It was Temple Lumber Company. But they actually had several other retail yards before Lufkin got one. I can't remember when Lufkin exactly got it, but Arthur Temple actually started in Paris, I believe. He was 17 or 18. That was his first job for the company, was at the retail yard, I think, in Paris. And then he came to Lufkin after being there a couple of years. So they actually had some earlier yards before Lufkin, but Lufkin would have been the first one in this area.
Old man Henry Temple, he was running Pineville.
Yeah, before he came to Dieball.
Before he came to Dieball. Yeah. And then, I don't know why, when Arthur moved to Dieball, instead of building a house, he just had that old Henry Temple home redone.
Mm-hmm. He still lives there.
He's right in.
Still there. I understand he's got other homes. He's got a few houses, I think, or at least one on Rayburn. But he lives there in Dieball. And in fact, I understand they've been doing some work. Lottie's not doing all that good. And so Arthur didn't want to, from what I understand, didn't want to put her in a home or anything. So she's staying there at the house.
Somebody said her sister, Betty Basquette, was taking care of her now.
She may be. I really don't know a whole lot about it, but I know she's not doing all that good.
Yeah.
Mr. Temple's down quite a bit about it, just feeling kind of low about it.
Well, is he in pretty good health?
Last time I saw him was a little over a month ago, and he was doing really good. I mean, I haven't been around him all that much. I want to know him better, but I mean, he was making jokes and, maybe his same old self, but I was impressed with how good he was doing. But other times I've talked to him on the phone and different things, and he just seems kind of down.
Yeah, John Rappold called me the other day and wanted some information on this bear deal.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think what happened was Bob Bowman had put an article in the paper, and that stirred up some stuff.
Well, you see, I called Bob, and he forgot all about this. In fact, he couldn't even remember it. So he told me, said, come on over here, I want to talk to you. So I went over there and took him some of them. I took him that one and showed it to him.
This one here?
Yeah, uh-huh. And the one from Dieball, too. And so then I went and had him a couple of copies made of it and gave to him.
Hmm.
So he's...
Out of the newspaper?
Out of the news. I just had copies made of that. Give it to Bob.
He's talking about the shop. I guess it was a truck shop?
Yeah, the truck shop.
It was up in Boggy area.
Yeah, up in North Boggy
there. North Boggy,
okay. They was him and Maxie Arnold and Walter Powell was the three company mechanics.
Walter Powell, would that be kin to Sandra Powell, John Ralph's wife?
No.
No,
different
set
of Powells. I don't know. He finally ended up at Dieball as a mechanic down there, but he had the shop there at my house, Walter Powell did. Then Maxie Arnold and Weldon come to Dieball first. They left up there, I think, and come to Dieball if they lived out there. That was either 47 or I think they was there 47, 48. But they was logging all in that open country up there. And then they finally started logging some in North Boggy up there. See, in 46, they didn't have a graded road in Boggy. No, they built those roads from 46 until 50. They come in there and built those roads.
Hmm. The company came in and built graded roads?
Yeah.
That was kind of when they were making transition from using some of those logging trucks and the railroad, because they closed Fastrell down in 41.
Yeah.
And so that would have been that time.
See, they was putting them logs out there at Neff.
Okay.
On the railroad track.
In 46?
46, 47, 48, in the 40s there.
Okay.
fact, this fella killed over there got a log rolled off on him. Mm. A boy by the name of Minton.
Not any kin to the Judge Minton?
No, he was different. Well, his brother, I believe, was engineer on that TSC train, Ramsey Minton.
Ramsey Minton, yeah, I've come across that name.
Yeah, well, Ramsey and Lewis is Lewis Minton. Ramsey and Lewis worked down there for, I guess, right. Now, Lewis was an engineer, too. He run the log train.
Okay. You know which locomotive numbers that they ran? Different ones, or were they assigned to?
Back then, when they was running the Fastrel, Titus Mooney was engineer.
I heard a lot about old Henry Titus.
Old Titus Mooney, he was quite a character. He run that log train. He made 2 trips a day from Dieball to Fastrel. He pulled 40 carloads of logs at a trip. Mm. He'd leave Dieball about 3 o'clock in the morning, and he'd end up about 9 o'clock that night with that second load. But that was in the 30s, or 20s. He started out in the 20s. He went to work for company as a bull puncher. That's what he...
That's working with the mule teams, or
Ox
or
teams,
the ox teams,
the old ox team. When his camp was at Walkerton, that's where he started to work.
Yeah, he was from Cherokee County. Was born there. Henry Titus was.
He had a problem. His eyes blinked all the time, both eyes. And he was a real engineer. He wasn't no question. That's the reason that old 13's preserved right now. Is due to Titus Mooney.
That was his engine.
That was his engine. That was the engine he
run. Oh, Jack Devereaux told me. You probably know Jack Devereaux, don't you?
Yeah.
Dred Sons.
Yeah.
He told me about Henry Titus Mooney. Said that he'd, what, nothing, he was afraid of nothing. He'd run that train.
Oh, he'd,
wherever it needed to go, as fast as it needed to go, said he'd be fine in the Dieball.
Well, one year, back when things were cheap as they were, he killed over $500,000 worth of livestock that the company had to pay for. He didn't slow up for nothing.
We've got some of those reports. You know, they call it, I forget what they term, but the company had printed forms, and somebody with the railroad had to fill them out, little pink slips, about half a page, and they would fill it out, who the person was, identified what livestock it was, and I mean, there'd be several, sometimes several a day. And it would tell what milepost that they hit them at.
Yeah.
And most of them were in that Trinity County, Rayville area. In fact, a lot of the people who it said owner was J.J. Ray.
Yeah.
So he killed a lot of Mr. Ray's cows.
Oh, yeah, he had them cows. They didn't have that railroad fence, see.
And I've seen letters where I forget now who it was with the company, but it was somebody in the company whose responsibility was to contact that person. Fill the report out, contact them by letter, saying, yeah, we acknowledge we hit, you know, your cow or calf, whatever, and this is what we'll pay you for it. And they'd write back and either accept it or argue for more money. And they'd go back and forth 3 or 4 times and, you know, well, I just sold cattle last week and I know I got this amount for it. They never could, some of them never were satisfied.
Well, you know a story, I'll ask old man Dave Kinley. He told me they killed a woman's milk cow way up there close to Kinleyville somewhere. So old man Dave, he gets on a motor car and goes up there to pay her for that cow. Well, he said he sat there and argued with that woman, tried to jeer her down on the price of that milk cow, and he couldn't do it. And he sat there till it got dark. Well, he was on a motor car and he didn't have a sign of a light. And he had to come back to Dieball. So on the way back to Dieball, he hit a cow and like to kill him and the cow both. And he told his story about being so tight that he tried to chew that woman down. She thought the price of the cow was too high. Then he had to pay for another cow. And like got killed in the process.
He actually admitted that.
He told me that story about he'd sit there and argued with it. It got dark on him, and then he didn't have a sign of a light on that motor car. Do you know they left Fastrel, and then along in the 30s, they went, 37, 38, they went back to pastoral again. My brother, oldest brother, went up there and lived when he went back the second time.
Who was that?
His name was Leonard Harper.
Leonard Harper. How many brothers and sisters did you have?
I had 3 brothers and 4 sisters.
And where were you in the ages? Were you?
I was, let's see, there was only 3 younger than me, 5 older. Yeah, Reuben Buster.